Coming up on today's episode, there's a Tesla pickup out there somewhere. Falcon Heavy launch going up on Monday. Blue Origin tested a new rocket engine, and the e-tron gets glowing reviews and recalled at the same time. Let's get ludicrous. Hi, and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about cool future stuff that's going to happen someday that today is going to be cool for tomorrow.
Yeah.
It just keeps getting better. I'm Joe Scott with Answers with Joe. I'm back from my trip, and with me today, and only with me, is Ben Sullins.
What's up, guys? It's Ben Sullins from Teslanomics, and we swapped him out, apparently. We swapped out Tim for Joe, and so, but the train keeps on going.
I just almost called you Tim, because I'm so, like, I've how many times? This is what, 39
or 40? Episode 39, yeah.
Episode 30. So 38 times. Well, I guess I missed the last two. I did my little standard intro, and then introduced Tim, and I almost introduced you on accident.
Don't do that.
Or I did.
People will not be fooled as soon as we start talking, though. So
right.
What do we want to start with today, Mr. Scott?
Tim is kind of sitting today out, I think, and that's fine. He deserves a little time off. I certainly had some time off the last couple of weeks. I was in Greece. I was all coy about it because my wife doesn't like for people to know like when we're out of town, so I didn't really tell anybody. But that's where we were. It was a great trip, and hi to Greece. And I love their food, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
I imagine just olives and hummus and stuff.
Yeah, but so everywhere you went, there was Greek salad, which was like big chunks of tomato and cucumber with olives, some onion, bell peppers, and feta cheese, big block of feta cheese that you can. And I actually don't generally like feta cheese, but I really liked it there for some reason. I guess it's fresher. It's more real.
It's like Guinness in Ireland or something, right?
I guess, yeah. But so the funny thing is, like, my wife and I, we had traveled to Italy and we traveled to France, both places that are, like, really well known for their food, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in both places, after, like, a week, I was like, give me a burger, for crying out loud. Like, I got tired of it so quickly. I never got tired of it in Greece.
That's good.
Just kept eating more gyros.
France, for me, was the one I really loved the food, even though, like, I'm not a huge... Like, to me, French food is an extremely rare steak and fries. And that's just like what all French food is. I'm sure there's much more complexity to it. But I remember I went there after being in Spain for 2 weeks, where basically all you eat is jamon and you drink wine. So it's just like there's like, you know, and I come from Southern California where I'm like, Mexican food, spice, give it to me.
Sure.
And I go to Europe and I'm like, everything is so bland. I can't taste anything. Like everything is so fried. So that's good to hear. Greece is good. Cause I mean, I would imagine that, but sometimes you never know.
I was surprised. I mean, not that I didn't think I would like it, but I don't eat a lot of Greek food. So I was,
and you had quite a journey getting there.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. Quite a journey getting back, too. It's a 26-hour trip. But nothing went wrong on that trip. It was just three flights.
Yeah. So this is why we're planning to go to Europe. Me and my family, we're trying to go to Europe next year sometime for extended stay. But just getting a 4 or 5-year-old at that point to go for a 26-hour journey, it's almost like we should maybe like fly to London and just stay there for a week. You know, or something, and just kind of get acclimated and then fly to Spain or wherever we end up going.
Yeah. Well, when we were on the way back and we were telling, there was an off-duty flight attendant that wound up sitting next to us, and he started a conversation. We were like, yeah, we started at 6 this morning and flew from Santorini to Athens to Chicago. And he was like, you did all that in one day? That's insane. And I'm like, this is a guy who lives on planes that's telling us that this was a bad idea. So That's my message to everybody out there. But no, when we flew out, we flew out of Philadelphia. We got an hour into the flight and they turned it back around.
Ooh.
And brought us back to Philadelphia. Something about the AC, like they had two different AC systems. One of them was down and regulations. They couldn't fly over the ocean or whatever. But anyway, we go back to the airport. They find us another plane. We board the plane, And this was already like, you know, 2 or 3 hours we were waiting. And the pilot comes on and is like, you know, we can only work so many hours at a time. And we were going to go over that. So we have to actually find a new crew.
Great.
So they deboarded the plane. And we sat there while they were calling up all these crew people in Philadelphia. Like, just, hey, do you want to go to Athens?
Yeah.
And finally, yeah, it was like 5 or 6 hours later when we finally got out. So we basically missed a full day of the trip.
It's crazy, too, just how much of a juggling act all of this is. Did any of that crew coming have to, like, they weren't physically there yet? Like, they were flying in themselves from another place?
The way they made it sound was that they're just, like, local people that they had to call at 1 a.m. and be like, hey, we need you on a flight. And they had to change clothes and get showered and get in a car. And, yeah, it was a whole thing.
Man. Well, you made it there. You had a good time. Now you're back. Now, don't you wish, though, that whole SpaceX thing where you can just, like, go up in a rocket and fly around?
The point-to-point thing?
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool?
I guess that would be cool. Is that a segue?
I don't know. I mean, what kind of power would you need to make that happen?
So, so we can talk about that. So I had heard some arguments about how that's really not actually a very good idea, and maybe Elon's got some things in mind that we're not thinking of, but, like, you wouldn't want to launch. I mean, think about how loud the Falcon Heavy launch was from where we were, and we were, what, 7 miles away?
We were, like, 15 miles away.
Or 15 miles away? Yeah. So you wouldn't want to launch anywhere near a city center.
Mm-hmm.
So just to get to where you would be launching from this rocket would probably take, well, a long time.
Yeah.
Just to get there and get on board and everything. And anyway, the argument is it would just be as easy to hop on a plane and do that for most flights as opposed to having to go through all the rigmarole of getting on
launching a rocket
from way out there.
I think Tim said 100 kilometers is how far away you'd have to be where the noise for a rocket that size wouldn't be a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, you know, that's just my memory, so I don't know how, but that's 62 miles away. So, and I remember us talking about that a long time ago when the whole BFR thing first got announced, or that preview video that Elon showed in Australia. And the thing was, they showed it from Manhattan. Like, you leave Manhattan and you land.
Yeah, like right there.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, so you're going to have to go 100 kilometers out to sea in order to do that. So you're going to need a Hyperloop or something. Otherwise, that's going to take another hour just to get there.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and if you have to go by boat, forget it. So, yeah.
What they need is a small rocket that goes from the city center to the rocket.
Yeah. The other rocket. Yeah. Now, can you just land, though? Do you just, like, parachute down, or do you propulsively land? You know what I mean? I guess you wouldn't want to ditch the stage, so.
Yeah, the small rocket from the city center actually lands on top of the big rocket, and then you board the rocket from there, and then the small one.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the right idea.
See what happens when Tim's not here?
Yeah. There's no grounding whatsoever.
We're just like, yeah, that makes sense. Let's do that.
Well, so why don't we just jump right into SpaceX news since we kind of
started talking
about rockets. SpaceX has a new Falcon Heavy launch that's coming up on Monday, and this is going to be actually really cool. So first of all, they're reusing the same cores that they used on the one that we saw, the Arabsat launch. So this is the first Falcon Heavy launch that's using reused cores. That's a first.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first night launch. The schedule window starts at, I think, 11:30 on Monday. It's the first multi-satellite Falcon Heavy launch. So, you know, they just did that Starlink launch on a regular Falcon 9, and they have, what, 64 on there? This one's going to have 24. Is it 60? No, it had 60.
Yeah, 60, because they need 420 exactly to, anyways, yeah.
So this one's going to have 24. different satellites, and one of them is actually really cool. It's the LightSail 2 satellite from the Planetary Society. So this is like a solar sail that they're going to try to prove the science of using a sail to actually go out from Earth.
Wait, yeah. So does that, how does it, what propels the sail?
But it, what, how it, where?
Because didn't Stephen Hawking have a thing about this with lasers?
Yeah.
And there was
it's,
like
it's
a,
an idea that's been around a while. So they actually launched one. It was the first one, the LightSail 1. And I don't remember what exactly happened with it. I'm sure somebody's going to tell me in the comments. But no, the idea is it's photon propulsion. So it actually uses the, even though like the mass is so small, the acceleration of the particles that come off of the sun, the rays that come off the sun hit this solar sail and pushes it along. And but the idea is, yeah, you could actually get one going using lasers and maybe even get it out to another star in
So the sun actually gets, it's just regular light.
So kind of like a sailboat tacks with the wind.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same kind of deal. It'll just kind of tack with the solar wind, and they're going to use it to sort of prove that idea, that science. And nice. So this is actually a really cool video that they have up here. This is specifically for this this launch.
So
they've got, like
listening.
I said, 24 different satellites here. Oh, another thing about it, it's going to have 4 burns. So the second stage usually only burns once or twice to get to the right orbit, and then they let go of the satellite and move on. This is going to actually... No, that's a different thing. That's a different thing.
Just throwing out words for Tim.
Yeah, we're using Tim's words. No, but this one's actually going to go to 3 different orbits to let go of these satellites. And so it's actually going to have 4 burns to get to those orbits. I think that might be a first for a Falcon Heavy, actually.
Hmm.
But it's a very complex mission, and it's really cool.
Makes you wonder why they don't launch them separately, or maybe just, you know, cheaper, I guess, this way.
Yeah, probably.
You know, there has to be a calculation somewhere, you know, someone has an Excel sheet on this that's like, okay, well, the complexity of this and the amount of things that can go wrong versus just doing it separately, what's the risk versus reward, you know, kind of a deal there.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, if they can get it all up there in that one second stage, then you're just paying for the fuel on that second stage, whereas a full launch, you would have to
it's like Uber.
Actually, you would have to use a different second stage for each one of those, because you can't reuse the second stage.
Uber pool for satellites here.
Yeah, actually it's kind of the same thing. So that's the shot of it in the fairing right there.
Nice.
So that's like a stack of 24 satellites. Some of them are Air Force satellites, different things. There's some little CubeSats that are going up, that light sail. So yeah,
very cool. So are you going down for this one?
No,
you've had enough Central Florida for a year, for this year.
I just got home, dude.
No, I feel you.
I got videos to get caught up on.
What, watching or making?
Yeah, nothing like being jet lagged and having to hit the ground running and get videos out. Oh, the life of a YouTuber, so hard.
so hard. So they're sending that up, and this is kind of a first in a few ways. Blue Origin also has a first.
Yeah.
Want to tell us what's going on, Blue Origin Azul?
Blue Origin, when was it? Like just a couple months ago, announced or introduced, revealed their moon lander that they call Blue Moon. They've been working on it for a while, and it has a new engine that they hadn't used before called the BE-7. So the new Shepard, which I actually talked about in today's video about Alan Shepard, because it's named after him, it uses one called the BE-3, and they have a BE-4 engine that's going to be on their new Glenn, and it's supposedly a monster. It's like this, it's one of the most powerful engines that's going to be out there once it gets produced. But anyway, the engine for this Blue Moon lander is called the BE-7 engine, and this was Bezos tweeted this out, I guess, today or the last couple of days, test firing the BE-7. So nice. That's good. It works.
So funny that all these billionaires are in this, right? like Richard Branson.
They could be doing worse things.
Yeah, yeah, I guess that's true. Like, isn't there a war going on between Pakistan and India about tree planting? Did you see that?
I missed that one.
It was something about, and you would imagine Pakistan and India, not, you know, the friendliest neighbors, but it was something like there was a report that came out that, that India had more trees or something like that. And so Pakistan saw that and they were like, all right, we're going to beat you. And they started planting more and more trees. And then everyone standing back is like, this is how wars should be.
Can we just I like that level of pettiness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's do more of that.
Like somebody just run an article saying that India has more teddy bears and watch Pakistan go into, we're offending our Pakistani viewers now, I'm sure, but
I mean, I don't think it's a stretch to say that Pakistan and India have tensions. I don't think that's, not that we have any.
It's a pretty fair statement.
Yeah. I think that's pretty objective truth right there.
One more thing about this engine, since we're kind of going off the thing. It actually, it works on hydrogen and oxygen specifically because, there's water on the moon in certain places and you can make hydrogen and oxygen with that. So it's like in situ fuel resource utilization. So
is that the
it's
idea
designed for that?
There would be, well, I guess you would need people to probably harvest that or.
Well, I mean, that's the same reason that the Raptor engine for the new Starship. Thank you. That's why it runs off of methane, is because
on Mars
you can make that from Mars. Yeah, from what's on Mars. So that's the idea. Is like instead of having to load up all the fuel and carry it, you can just make it there.
Yeah.
So wonder that's what they're thinking with the Blue Moon.
I wonder. Like, I'm really interested in the whole asteroid mining thing and how that's going to go. I feel like there's been a lot of science fiction talk about it lately, and then some people are like, yeah, we could do that. But that sounds super interesting to me. Like, the only thing I heard actually Neil deGrasse Tyson and Stephen Dubner talking about it. So two of my favorite voices out there. And they were making some really interesting points that basically bringing any of those assets, those resources back down to Earth doesn't make sense, with the exception of, say, water. That's the only one that would really really benefit all of humanity, is bringing, you know, just unfathomable amounts of ice essentially down. But something like gold, you know, it's funny that there was this whole debate around if you mine resources like gold or diamonds or something like that, which are either actually somewhat scarce on Earth or artificially scarce on Earth, such as diamonds, then what would happen to the economy of those things? Like, it would probably be more harmful than it would be helpful. But something like gold is an interesting one because it actually does have like actual physical uses, not just like pretty shiny object, but the pliability of it, the conductivity, all those kind of things.
Right.
And so perhaps if we got an abundant amount of those things, we would actually use them in some way, you know, besides.
That is an interesting debate. Like, would that actually be a terrible thing to go pull that stuff? Like, would it destroy the economy if we collected those materials and brought it in? Maybe someone should do a video about that. We could do that.
Speaking of doing videos, I just posted a video today, and this is a sort of a plug and sort of a, I think this is cool, so I think you guys might be interested as well. My friend Jehu and I built, well, okay, he built it. I just convinced him to build it. built a portable gas can for your Tesla. It's a battery that fits in a suitcase. All the parts and all the components and all that stuff are in there. And it has 2.2 kilowatt hours of energy. It's 196 cells that are in the same format, the same size and shape as the ones that are actually in a Tesla. These weren't from a Tesla, but they're, you know, commensurate in that way. And then you hook up the inverter to it and you plug it into your car. And so you have a gas can for your Tesla. Now, I'm going to assume that Joe hasn't watched the video, otherwise he'd be commenting, because it.
I saw it. I'm just letting you talk.
Because it it kind of didn't work. And so
but
the
it kind of did. It worked better than the last one that you tried.
Yeah. So this was the third attempt here. So my friend Dan and I did one with this Anker battery that he had, which was like this tiny little thing. And that didn't even work at all because the car knew that it wasn't grounded and all this. And so he got an electrician friend to rig one up, and then that did work. However, it gave him, he said in the video, 2 miles in 1 hour of charging. But then later when I was talking to him, he said he thinks it was 3 in the end, but he kind of cut it short. And when we did our test, we got 4. So we're, you know, inching along here. We're getting better. But like the concept of it being, oh crap, I ran out of juice. I need to plug something in and get going here. Doesn't, like, it's not practical, I would say. You know what I mean? But I just thought it was interesting. I mean, did you have any thoughts or takes on this? Questions or anything?
Am I mistaken, or was it getting about 7 miles per hour of charge?
You are mistaken. It was getting 7 amps.
Oh.
Worth of it was getting 4 miles.
Oh, okay.
Let me see if I have. So the interesting thing about it, so I just assumed it was like a consumer product, like you just plug it into the wall. But he let me borrow it, and then I'm like, hey, how do I charge it? Because I just looking at it like it's literally just a box of batteries. And he's like, oh, you need a charger. You don't have one of those? Like, I don't know what you mean by that. And so he came over, and so it's kind of like a power supply that you would have in your computer, or, you know, like a PC power supply kind of a thing. And then you have this like regulator thing that will. So when you're charging lithium ion batteries, the acronym he had was CCCV. So there's constant current or constant voltage, and you need like a device essentially that will regulate one or the other. Otherwise, the batteries won't charge. So they kind of, otherwise you'll damage them essentially. And if different chemistries of different batteries, you know, obviously work differently. But essentially, you need something to control the amount of current and how fast it's going into the batteries, and it needs to be consistent. And so that's what this little device, if you guys are just listening, it's like you see this black box, which is a power supply from a computer, and then this little kind of circuit board thing that has some screws on it that he was manually adjusting. So that's how we ended up charging it at my house there. And then later when we plugged it in, we were getting, you can see here, four miles per hour is what we were getting, which was seven amps. However, those amps were 230, you know, oscillating between 230 and 240 volts. So even though it was plugged into like a regular 110 kind of outlet, which is what the inverter had, it actually was pulling, you know, essentially double what you would normally get in an outlet here in the U.S.
Right. Okay. So that's what I was thinking about, because I remember seeing it when I was watching the video and thinking, that's actually more than I got out of my wall when I first had a car, or when I first got the car and I didn't have the 240 volt.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Model 3 and the Model S and the Model X all charge differently in our testing. So the Model 3, we could pull 10 amps, and I believe that was about 7 miles per hour is what we were going to get. The Model X that we actually did the full cycle on was only pulling 7 amps, so not 12. Not 10 is what the Model 3 got. So, and basically what that comes down to is the inverter. I've got a lot of comments on the video about, well, you just need this, you just need that, you just need that, right? And it's, you can tell, like, some people are like, oh, that's a good point. Other people, it's like you're missing some of how this works. So, and not that I'm an expert or anything, but after hanging out with these guys, I feel like I've got a little bit of juice left. The big challenge that, like, the story behind this that I felt was interesting was Teslas are insanely power hungry. They're like 90 or 100 kilowatt hours. You, depending on your energy usage, you could run your house on that for like a week, right? A Tesla Powerwall is a battery backup home battery, and it's essentially the same thing that's in your car. Now, one of those can power a home for like a day to 2 days is what they rated at. And those, the newer ones, have, I believe, 13.5 kilowatt hours. So imagine 100 kilowatt hours. You know, you've got like a whole bunch of power walls. Like, you could literally run your home for a week off your car if you really had to. Those things are just beasts when it comes down to it.
Yeah, that's why I don't know. I'm not trying to make a why don't they just here, but Don't you think someday we're going to be able to just plug our cars in and use that as a battery backup for the house?
Yeah, it's the original Model S you could do that with. It was Yeah, it was called vehicle to grid V2G.
Right.
Elon has, I believe, responded to people asking about that a few times, saying, "Yeah, it'll be possible." I think if you can do that, then you could presumably do vehicle to vehicle charging, which at the end of the video is something I suggested, because if you think about it, a gas can for a absolute power hungry monster like an electric car, the only thing that's going to have that much juice and carry it and all that is another electric car. Or if you have a truck that's purpose built with nothing but a giant battery in the back. And so,
like a mobile charger.
Correct.
I do think that's a good idea.
But there's two things to that that were interesting when I was talking to Jehu and these guys. Was one is that really the kind of the bottleneck here is the inverter, because what you're doing is taking DC energy stored in those battery cells, converting it to AC energy. That AC energy is going into your car, into your Tesla, which has a charger. The actual charger for a Tesla is in the car. And it converts that AC energy coming in back into DC energy, which is what the battery wants. So that whole thing is incredibly inefficient. And the amount of energy it takes to push, to convert that and push it in there is tremendous. So like an inverter that could power like a supercharger, for example, if you ever see a Tesla supercharger, somewhere nearby are full-on transformers that are like 7 to 9 feet tall behind usually these big gated things, and they're running fans at all. Like, it's insane the amount of equipment you need to push that much power. So if you could go DC to DC, that would be better. But even then, you need 400 volts, which means you need basically a Tesla-sized battery in order to push that much energy. So in the end, there's just no way around it. You know, I don't think a solution with current available battery tech really can exist.
What's to stop somebody from just buying, say, like a U-Haul truck and then taking some old Tesla wrecked cars or something and taking all those batteries and stacking like 4, 5, 6, 7 whatever battery packs and just driving around and being like a source for people on the road if they get
that's possible. I think gravity would have something to say, and your tires would not be on your side.
Be a low rider.
Yeah, because those things are pretty dang heavy. But yeah, I mean, that's essentially what we were doing, just in micro form, you know, because like the size of that battery box that he made is basically how big a battery pack is. I mean, obviously it had a bit more because we had all the other stuff built into it as well. The battery management system and all that stuff was already kind of combined in there. But that, yeah, I mean, that's a totally like legit idea. But there definitely is a point where it'll just get so heavy it won't make sense, right?
Did he make that suitcase, or did he buy it like that? Did he like rig it himself?
Yeah, he did it. I mean, he bought a plastic suitcase from his Amazon Basics,
like a little Pelican case.
Yeah, and then he cuts into it, puts the LED display there, puts the little hot and cold, you know, the different switches and everything on it. So yeah. Yeah, and that's what his video was that I linked to for mine, was how you could actually build that exact thing.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. Cool. I mean, I don't have that kind of patience, but it's fascinating.
Interestingly, this is the second conversation I've had today about inverters.
Really?
Yeah, I did an interview with a guy earlier for a video next week. I can't really talk about it yet, but he deals with electric vehicles, and he was talking a lot about how inverters make the big difference. And I was like, and actually I had seen your video just before that. And then we talked about that, and now we're talking about it again. So it's inverter day for Joe, but they're kind of the unsung heroes of EVs that don't really get talked about. Everybody talks about batteries and the specs and the storage capacity and all that, but it's kind of the inverter that makes the whole thing work.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, depending on what your use case is, right? Like, I'm pretty sure the motor in a Tesla doesn't, you don't have an inverter between those two things. But like from your house to your car, that's it, mm-hmm. right? You've got to convert that from AC to DC. And it's a well-known thing. Like when I was there at EV West and we were messing with it, they actually brought out, so I think the one Jehu had was a 6,000 watt charger or something like that. And they brought out an 8,000 watt one. And I mean, the thing is, 4.5 feet tall and weighs 100 pounds. So when you look at it like, you just need a bigger inverter. Like, yeah, but it's not going to fit in your car. Like you're going to need a truck to pull that thing. And at that point, forget it. So.
Well, I do hope that we get the whole vehicle to grid thing someday. Cause you always hear these people making the argument that, well, if everybody on a block had an electric car and they were all charging, it would overwhelm the system and everything. But if you had the vehicle to grid thing, wouldn't that just stabilize the system? Wouldn't that actually make things a bit smoother because you have all this battery capacity kind of
like you're pulling energy from everything? Your neighbor's car, essentially?
Well, I'm just saying, like, it's instead of it all being like through the power lines, you could actually have something kind of a buffer, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard a lot of people.
Maybe I'm talking out my butt. I don't know.
Well, I think the question is, where does that energy come from to begin with? Like, if you go to a Tesla supercharger and then come home and power your house, like, that's an interesting scenario where would you just do that so you don't have to pay electricity anymore and Tesla's fitting the bill? Or like, what would the use case be? I could see in a power outage when it makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
Or if a utility, like I think getting to what your point is. So like right now in San Diego, or in California, there's these state rebates for people to install home batteries. And the big reason is because of, when everyone gets home from work and there's this huge spike in demand for electricity, mm-hmm. the grid obviously has to handle it. And it's problematic. That's what makes it so expensive. So if instead you could have, you can have a home battery, then, it just works. It's like a decentralized power plant, almost, right?
Right.
Now, installing those and buying those is a bit redundant if, like at my house, we have a couple hundred kilowatt hours of it just sitting around on wheels. So right. Could I, instead of having a home battery, just plug that in, and then my house can run off of that, which honestly, like from the time I get home all the way to the next day, isn't like won't even really put a dent in the amount of energy that's in the car because it mm-hmm. is so much. So it's an interesting point for sure. I think it'd be real easy to abuse, so you'd have to have ways to regulate it or something,
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I've been wanting to get solar panels and some kind of battery backup for some time, and just for various reasons it hasn't happened. But actually, while we were out of town, there was this huge storm that hit Dallas, and our power was out for 2 days.
Wow.
Yeah, all over town.
Is that why that crane fell down?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, it was the same storm, yeah.
Yeah.
And it knocked out power for a big part of the city.
Man,
for 2 days.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. And in fact, I'm actually getting two power walls now installed as soon as the permits are done. So it's kind of cool. I'll be sharing that online. It turned out to be relatively cheap to. Originally, I was going to trade in one because I thought the cost to install was going to be like 10 grand. And it came down to like under 3 grand to get the two of them installed.
Isn't there a backup on those or a backlog?
Maybe.
On the power walls, like, isn't it hard to get one?
I don't think so. Maybe
no. Oh, okay.
They have there are multiple kinds. The ones these are all from the referral program, Tesla referral program, and they were supposed to be the red ones that were actually physically signed by Elon and JB and Franz, but they emailed me and said, oh hey, sorry, they emailed me basically, hey, we got power walls, sweet, let's schedule it, and then last minute. Ooh, you know, these white ones are pretty sweet. You should check out just the plain white one. I think it'd look better, honestly. Honestly, this is better for you.
Our hands cramped signing all these things, and we just didn't want
to. You know, it's like they're trying to convince you of it after the fact, after you're 10 steps in. But I don't really care. I'm like, hey, whatever,
Yeah. As long as they work.
Yeah, for me. So I'll have more stories to tell on that. Having two is an interesting thing because, and with charging electric cars, you kind of have to think, okay, well, what's more cost efficient at that point to pull the energy from, because again, if I have a car with, let's say, 75 kilowatt hours and another one with 90 kilowatt hours, I'm getting two home batteries that total 27 kilowatt hours. So like, they don't stand a chance if I really need to charge.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? But I think, so maybe it's like, we don't, like when we plug the electric car and we don't pull from the power walls. I don't know. Like, these are all things that I'm kind of excited to figure out. So if anyone knows out there, anyone has experience, leave me a comment.
You're going to have to teach us, Sensei.
Just, you know, I'll share all of my mistakes with you so you don't make the same ones. How about that? Speaking of...
I've been getting some referrals, but so far it's just gotten me supercharger miles, which is nice, but...
I think that's all they give now, right?
Yeah, I guess. No, you're supposed to be able to enter a drawing for a Model Y and a Roadster and stuff.
Yeah. In 20...
You got all the fun stuff.
They didn't say what year those drawings were going to be in, did they? That was the funny thing when like all this stuff, and so yeah, I guess, you know, I'm like somewhat of a veteran from the referral program at this point, but there was definitely like a lot of people, especially when they added the Model 3 to the referral program, that were like, yeah, and then now they're realizing how back, like these power walls were from 2017 that I earned them through the referral program in Q1 of 2017. That's how long ago it was. So,
wow.
There's, I mean, like the Roadster thing, sweet. Yeah. Like, I'm hoping I get them before I'm ready for a midlife crisis. That's when, because that's when I'll really need them.
That's when you'll need them. Yeah.
So, you know, but it is what it is. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways.
No one's crying for you, just so you know.
Yeah. Well, I was hoping for something, but no.
you're not getting it.
In other Tesla news, there have been some fun hacking projects going on there. Specifically, Simone Giersch, I'll say.
Giersch. Yeah, I think that's how it's.
Of the Shitty Robots fame, made a Tesla truck. And it is freaking awesome. Let me see if I can just get a shot kind of it. So she took a Tesla Model 3. I'm sure you guys have all seen this, but in case you haven't, she's calling it Truckla. I'm not in love with the name, but I get where she's going. And it is a Tesla Model 3 that she chopped the back end off and, or the back top off of, put in some more structural supports, actually put a window on it, like a truck window. I think it was from a Chevy or F-150 or something, or no.
It
was from a Chevy something or other that had like a, because the Model 3 width, it's like a very, you know, compared to a typical truck, it's like very skinny and narrow. So she actually put a back on it and then put a roof rack on it. So she has, it's more like a Tesla El Camino than it is a Tesla truck. But
that's, yeah.
But it's really cool and extremely well done. And the video that they made with it is phenomenal.
Yeah.
So I think this was the perfect thing for her. I actually didn't post a video for 2 days after this because I was just like, okay, that's it. I'm done. Like I'm,
go home.
Yeah.
It's over.
Like, okay, guys, it was nice knowing you. That's about all I got.
Yeah.
You know,
that's when you're like, I'm good at making videos. Oh,
right. You're like, oh, man, I've got this video. I'm so pumped. Wait, what is it? Oh.
Yeah. Well, and it was a collab video, too, with Rich Rebuilds and a couple of other people.
Laura something and, yeah.
I don't know the others, but I know.
Yeah,
Rich.
I knew Rich. And, yeah, super cool. I mean, just I love that Tesla is, like, even though, you know, she did this was her deal. This all is inspired by, I think, the ingenuity in just how Tesla is changing the world. I mean, this is like, she didn't take a Chevy Cruze and do this, right? She took.
Well, and when you watch the full video, it's like 30 minutes long. My favorite thing is you see her go through the emotions of getting a Tesla, which you and I have both experienced. And it's that whole like euphoria of, oh my God, I got this thing. And then she knows that she's going to tear this thing apart.
Yeah.
And she takes it back to her little garage or wherever it is that they're doing this. And she says something at the beginning about, like, I should key the trunk just so I don't get too attached to it, because it's going to be gone. And there's this horrible, painful moment where she's got a key and she, like, writes Tesla or Truckla in the back of it. And she's just like, why do people do this? This is terrible. I feel awful. It was a very real, like, emotional thing, and not just for her, but I think just watching somebody do that, it's like, oh
yeah. And the
it's a gut punch.
Sound.
Yeah, the sound.
Oh. Now, there was an interesting bit from that video, and I found it right here, where she made her first cut of the actual body there, where she was cutting the top bar. And she explained that what happened afterwards was it started to like cave in on itself.
Yeah.
Now, I had heard from some folks I know that there's a video, like a video, private Tesla video, basically of like the skateboard of the car. And the whole thing is so incredibly light, and there's so much tension and stuff from the battery pack that without the actual body, the whole thing just kind of folds together like a taco. And so as soon as she made that cut and she started talking about that, I was like, oh, crap, that's right. This thing is not stable. Like, it is super strong and perfectly designed the way it is, but the minute you mess with the structural integrity of it, like, it's a different animal altogether. So that was really interesting.
So why is that, that it folds? I know you just explained it.
The way they explained it to me was something about the tension of the battery pack and all that, like the frame versus the body. If you take the body off, you know, like the doors and all that parts, the underlying frame or whatever that's left, it has so much tension and pressure that it collapses in on itself. Like how it's made or something. I'm not sure. Maybe it's the metal is so light or something like that, and the weight of it is too heavy. I'm not quite sure. Yeah. Quite sure what causes it, but
I remember that part in the video where she cut it, and it was like, oh, that was structural, and we're gonna have to like reinforce this, and it's a whole deal that they weren't expecting.
And then she's like, oh wait, yeah, I guess we probably should have guessed that. Like, you can't just cut the roof off a car and it'd be like, you know, normal, like. Otherwise, everyone would do it, right?
It's a very small part of a car, really.
Oh, man. So
it is a cool video, though. So if you haven't seen it, go check it out.
Amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Yeah.
I would not have the stones to do that.
I mean, I'm just in awe of her. I have been for a long time. But watching that, I was just like, oh, this is the most amazing thing. And I understand why Rich didn't tell me, because he went up there and did that with her and then came to San Diego right afterwards. And I didn't hear a word out of it, and I'm like, what's up? But super cool. And I think there's going to be more to come on that project. I think it's got I don't think it was totally finished when they filmed this stuff, but they had like already booked a shoot and had a director like for their fake Tesla commercial thing. So I think like there's still a lot more to come. But super cool.
They need to put a gun rack in it.
Well, they have.
Then it's a true truck.
They have one on top. I mean, you just need a bigger gun.
Yeah. They need a howitzer up there, like a zombie apocalypse kind of thing.
That is exactly right. So, speaking of fighters, I don't know where.
What is a car that nobody's trying to turn into anything? That's probably kind of rude.
Man, all right. Well, in the electric car space, the Audi e-tron, or e-tron, I'm not sure how you say it,
e-tron,
received glowing first-drive reviews from Consumer Reports. If you recall, the Consumer Reports, when they reviewed the first Tesla, it actually broke the scale. So I don't know if they got that quite a good reviews, but they... They've labeled it pretty good. They praised the two-screen interface. They liked the dedicated climate system. Obviously, the interior is fantastic. It's an Audi. They know how to make cars, no doubt. And you know, they stated that the e-tron has an air of maturity that exudes quality, and it's likely because it comes from an established luxury automaker. Also known as a diss. to Tesla. I'll give him that though. I've seen this up close. Yeah, it's great, and certainly Teslas are different than when it comes to this stuff. If you're looking for that luxury feel that you get from a Mercedes or an Audi or BMW, you won't find it in a Tesla. But it doesn't mean that it's not nice. It just means that it's different, right? So in the same breath, I think, or maybe within the span of a week, let's say, when the e-tron gets this glowing review of Consumer Reports, it also gets entirely recalled. And every single Audi e-tron is now being recalled, and there is no fix from unless there's been an update here that I haven't seen, for a potential thermal event. There was a grommet in the battery seal that apparently showed some wear after testing, something like that. But by thermal event, they mean fire. And for the record, a battery fire is extremely rare. It is very difficult to catch these things on fire. That's why it's such a big deal when one of them does. Unlike, a combustion vehicle that has a combustible material that it combusts.
It combusts.
Imagine that. So if this has a potential thermal event, also known as a fire, that to me says it's very wrong. It's something totally wrong. And so as far as we know, these are kind of dead in the water. So despite the glowing review of the luxury air climate control system, the functional bit of the battery and the driving and all that isn't going to work. Now, I really hope that they do come back. I really hope that the e-tron can exist. And maybe this will give them a chance to redo the battery stuff. I don't think anyone doubted their ability to make a good-looking, comfortable car. Like, that should just be a given, right? I think that's harder for Tesla to do than it is for an Audi or any of the others. But put this thing. I mean, you can get a Model X with 310 miles of range now. Come on, like you got to be sitting back going, okay, this our new Tesla killer needs to get at least 60% of what the Tesla gets.
Yeah.
I doubt they will, but that's what would be my hope.
Yeah. I try really hard to check my Tesla bias at the door. And I really want, I've said this a million times, I really want there to be a great, robust EV market. And I want to see Audi succeed. And I want to see VW succeed and all these guys. I often have my doubts as to how serious they are about it.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they get this they get this fixed. I know that Audi can make some great cars, and I would love to drive around an e-tron. Honestly, I've never seen one in person, and I'd like to give it a whirl and see what it's like. When it has, I don't know. I mean. Like the Honda, what is the Honda E? Is that what they're calling it?
Mm-hmm.
It only has like around 120 or so miles of range. It's a city driver.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Which you could say, it's still early days of the EV. This is how it starts. Like, right. Like when the Nissan Leaf came out and it was like, it's a city driver, and that was like 10 years ago or more now. It's like, yeah. Like at this point, I mean, the E does look pretty cool. I'm looking at it now.
Yeah.
What does it say? Top speed, electric range, 200 kilometers.
Okay.
That's not much.
It's 120 something miles.
Yeah. Again, really cool looking. It's funny because when you, one of my favorite channels to watch, I don't really watch any other Tesla channels and all that stuff because I try to avoid copying what someone else is doing or being influenced by them and all that. But the one channel I do watch a lot of is Fully Charged. Yeah. And those guys always have the rosiest outlook on every electric car. And I think that's appropriate, right? Like, I think if our goal is to get us to electric or sustainable forms of transportation, we need people like that. We need people that are far less biased than I am. But me, I'm still looking at it going, I expect more. I'm like that father that's always disappointed in you. You know what I mean? It's like,
I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you didn't get an A plus, huh? You just got an A?
Yeah.
Well, your sister, you know, thank God we still have her. You know, maybe. it looks cool though. I love what they're doing. I think, you know, if you're making this tiny cute little car, this Honda E, and we're showing photos of it online if you guys want to go check those out. I think it's really cool. I really hope it's a thing. I think that there are many electric cars should come in many sizes and shapes. They all should just, you know, go a lot further than they currently do.
I mean, again, me being from Texas, like, I have to have some kind of range on there just so that I can go see people in it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And of course I have that bias of like I have my concerns about the whole Tesla truck thing, and Elon's talking about it being really sci-fi and everything, and I'm like, I don't know any pickup drivers that want that.
Yeah.
I just don't. And I hope it's successful. I'm curious to see what comes out, but I just like,
yeah,
they're very brand loyal, the pickup truck owners.
Yeah, they
are. I mean, how many other brands have people following them that have stickers on the back of their trucks of Calvin peeing on the other guy, the competition, you know, like.
This sounds like a great merch opportunity.
For Tesla?
Like, yeah, well, like I could make these stickers and sell them. Like pissing on, I don't know, what would they pee on?
A gas engine?
Yeah, I guess like I don't want to pee on another electric car. Like that seems wrong, you know.
Well, you'll see guys driving around in Chevy pickups with Calvin pissing on a Ford and vice versa, and like I don't see those guys going out and buying a Tesla.
Yeah, I doubt it. You know, I think when it comes down to it, it's probably more like on the pure economics, it has to make sense. Mm-hmm. So thankfully, trucks are damn expensive. They're very.
Oh yeah, they're already spending quite a bit of money on their trucks.
Yeah, so I don't think anyone buying a top of the line pickup truck in the U.S. has any hesitation spending $70,000+ on a vehicle. But dollar for dollar, I think the Tesla truck has to just win, like just hands down. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it's going to be a very difficult battle. It's one thing when you're selling luxury sedans to rich people in California. It's another thing when you're selling Uber functional minimalist tech cars to young people in California. Mm-hmm. Then it's different when your market aren't those people that value those things.
Yeah.
Right? But if I can spend $80,000 on a truck and you can spend $80,000 on a truck, and we can do a tug of war through the mud, and I can whip you around like a little rag doll, I'm gonna buy that truck, right? Like that's the kind of thing I think they need to get after. Maybe put out some fake coal rolling action, something like that. Like
what's the electricity equivalent?
Yeah, just like freaking lightning bolts shooting at people as they go by. Like a Tesla coil.
Yeah. There you go.
There you go. That'd be the Easter egg. Yeah. It's going to be an interesting battle. Like I remember when the semi-truck came out, I was talking to that guy, Phil LeBeau, who's, I think he's CNBC, but he's like a on TV guy. And that was the first thing he said. You know, it's funny, as much crap as people give CNBC about hating on Tesla, he didn't seem that way in person. He seemed very much like, hey, this is the trucking industry. What matters is money. If you can make this economical... then no one will care. And I'm like, I'm with you. And I think Elon came out and he knew that, and that's what they said. So yeah, it'll be really interesting to see. Hopefully we'll see the truck later this year.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
We did it.
We got nothing else to talk about.
I did have a question about
that's all that's happened.
The maybe not your latest video, but the, what's it called? Bacteriophage?
Yeah.
How do you say it?
Bacteriophage.
P-H-A-G-E.
Yeah.
just like not a word that should exist. Phage. Okay. So is that the thing they're using to fight HIV?
It's one of the things.
Because yeah. I saw this whole thing a while ago where they were talking about, I think it was actually cancer that they were killing. And and the weird part, oh, and you know what? This is something different. This was they would inject a patient with something that would attach itself to the cancer cells. And it was a virus. It was like HIV, I think, was the virus. And somehow they modified it to attach itself to cancer cells. And then your body would attack it and kill it naturally.
Oh, okay.
Because it was one of those things, like the reason cancer kills you is because your body doesn't recognize it
right.
as a foreign object or, you know, as something it should do. But if it did, it would have plenty of, you know, strength or whatever to do it.
Yeah. And so this basically gets the immune system to attack the cancer by attaching
HIV
to
it.
Things to it. Yeah.
And yeah. It's like, hey, you have cancer. How about some HIV to go along with that? It may work.
I know. It's bizarre sounding, but
it sounds sketchy, right?
Well, actually, I saw a video today from was it Minute Earth that was talking about it was similar to the bacteriophage thing. In fact, as I was watching that, I was like, did these guys come out with a video just like mine? But no, it was about a different kind of thing where they took some properties of the cancer cell and turned it against itself, basically. So the thing about cancer is that it's kind of immortal. It doesn't die off like the rest of our cells do. So it just keeps multiplying and becomes tumors. And so they have a way of creating antibodies that can go and attack these cancer cells. But the problem is that the cells that create the antibodies only live for a few days. So what they actually did was kind of mutate and combine cancer cells with these, and I don't know what they're called, it's not on the tip of my tongue, but these cells that create the antibodies, they kind of merge those together so that the antibody-producing cells could live on and produce these things that go and attach to receptor sites on cancer cells, and they can modify them so that it can, one of them was saying it could deliver chemotherapy specifically to those cancer cells. And the other was actually like radioactive particles.
Oh, interesting.
So it'd be like a radiation treatment. So yeah, you would embed these radioactive particles into these antibodies that find the cancer cells, and it just kind of like, it's a targeted radiation thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, the whole time watching your video about that, I just kept thinking, this is how the zombies come. This is it.
this is like 28 like days later.
This is, oh yeah, we invented this cure for cancer, and that's the end of it. It turns everyone into a zombie.
Well, even I am a little bit, there was a part in the video where I talked about how bacteria adapts and mutates, and that's why it's so hard to, that's the problem with using antibiotics is that you develop antibiotic-resistant bacteria, and the thing about phages is that they evolve themselves.
Yeah.
Well, if they evolve and mutate, then what could they turn into that could actually be one of those, like, oops, what did we do kind of things?
Yeah, now we have the super bug that actually kills everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I'm positive on it. And I actually just lost an uncle this week to cancer. Mm-hmm. And I'm up for anything that can kick it in the teeth a little bit. But
yeah,
some of it can be a little scary and weird.
Yeah, hopefully we figure something out.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very personalized medicine kind of thing, like where they literally they take something from you and they use that to adapt it and make something that they can re-inject back into you. And
Will happen to human population, though, if none of us die from this? I guess
we'll find other things to die from.
Yeah, I'll say we'll probably find other creative ways to kill each other or to kill ourselves. Yeah. I did just see that was it 2030 human population may be on the decline. Did you hear about this?
I know that they're not as worried about the population bomb as they used to be because as the population becomes more, or as we rise out of poverty, we have fewer kids.
Right. Yeah. And so there was a new study that just came out. You know, if I had any thought, I would have researched this before. But that basically that's what they said, that the number of children. On average was declining, and if it keeps going at that rate, that within like by 2040 or 2050 we'll actually start to see a population decline. And the way that the news framed it was that this was a bad thing. And that just reminds me of the previous time we were talking about this, where we were all scared there would be too many people and how would we feed them and what would that do to the atmosphere. And now, like, when we find it's going to go the other way, we also say, like, wait a minute, you can't, both things can't be bad. Or is that just the news trying to get more clicks? I don't know what the deal is here.
Yeah. But I think I heard Peter Diamandis talking about this, about how, like, it would basically be like a recession, a global recession, because there's fewer people using. I don't understand it, but basically, like, it if it contracts, it's like an economic contraction, and it could lead to like a global economic depression. But it's an economy thing; it's not a resource thing. And the economy is something we just kind of made up. So, you know.
Yeah, from a resource thing, it's hard to argue that it's a bad thing.
Right.
Like, fewer people means we're consuming, like, we're killing the planet less.
At a slower rate.
We'll
only need 3 Earths instead of 4 to sustain it.
It sounds like the conversation I had with my 3-year-old trying to explain to him why this is the best planet. He's like, no, I want to go to this planet. He's like pointing at Jupiter. I'm like, no, you don't. Trust me, you don't. It sucks there. Like, it's really not.
Maybe I have a video about what happens if he fell into Jupiter. It's not good.
One day I'll show it to him when he understands.
Right.
Oh, man. Sometime in our ludicrous future.
Oh, wait. We didn't talk about what we're working on.
What are you working on?
What are you working on?
I asked you first.
I asked you first.
What am I working on?
You just don't want to answer.
I have too many videos shot right now. I think, what's next week? Which Tesla is my favorite? That's the next. I think that's next
week.
Well,
we all know that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the truck.
Don't we?
As we just heard. Right.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm actually going for the e-tron. That's my favorite. Selling
the Tesla e-tron.
No, yeah. So we went and shot that video a while ago, Jenny and I. And so we have them all lined up and talking about that. I think it's a ton of hubris to assume that people give a crap which one is my favorite. But I think the value people can get out of it is me and my family have owned all 3 now for a good period of time. And so just a lot of, you know, conversation. That's why I brought my wife into it, because just me, it would be kind of like, I don't know, that'd be kind of boring.
Sure.
But having us go back and forth about, because there's so many moments where I'm like, oh, this is what I love about this. She's like, that's what I hate about it. And I'm like, whoa, okay. So it's pretty unscripted. You know, we kind of knew the order of things we wanted to talk about. So that's coming out. Should be out next week, unless Simone posts another video about Tesla, in which case I'm just going to quit.
Crushes your hopes.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
So, what about you, sir? Do you already have a bank of videos? How does this work when you go on vacation as a YouTuber? I'm not familiar.
Well, no, I did before I left, and now I'm having to get caught up again. So, I had to hit the ground running. Monday's video, I just recorded it this morning. It's on the Carrington event. Are you familiar with the Carrington event?
Carrigan?
Carrington.
Oh, no.
It was in 1859. It was a gigantic solar flare and coronal mass ejection, basically, that if it happened today, a lot of people think it would basically send us back like 100 years.
Please tell me cosmic rays.
Solar rays.
That's a
which travel through the cosmos.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what a cosmic ray technically is, but that's the term. Remember the thing we were talking about, how it tripped the computers in the Toyotas?
Yeah.
Is that why it would send us back 100 years, because of the problem it would cause with electronics?
Well, so when this happened in 1859, the telegraph was still fairly new, and it was like the internet of its day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And literally, telegraph operators were getting shocks from their stuff.
It's that insane.
It was that insane. It's something that like rarely happens. I mean, for a solar flare to hit us at all, like everything has to be lined up just right. But this was like this super flare that just happened to hit us. So it's basically looking at that and saying, what if it happened today?
Kind of thing. Wow. I imagine people in airplanes would not be happy.
Well, I'll let people watch the video and find out the results.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, as I'm sure everyone is. By the way, I believe we just passed 20,000 subscribers here on the podcast.
Did we now?
Yeah.
See, that's what happens when I'm gone for a couple weeks.
There you go.
People finally show up.
By the way, do not go search YouTube for OLF. That's not what you want.
Did that bring up something else?
That's just a bunch of random stuff. Yeah, just hit 20,000. So thank you guys for... Oh, and if I click on it, apparently I'm unsubscribing. So don't do that. Well, yeah, we're actually coming up a few more weeks here, and we'll be at a year doing this thing. So.
Oh my God! Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was last August, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So or
we're coming
July?
Up a couple more Ish. Months here. So let's I don't know. Let's keep it going, and then maybe we should have like a 1 year party somewhere. Where's good in August? I don't imagine the answer has anything to do with Texas.
We'll have to look back over our ludicrous past year.
Have a nice little like montage. Okay, right. Sounds good.
Thanks, everyone.
And we'll see you in our
ludicrous dog barking.